So when you think about it, Lev Bell, Adrian Peterson, Kerryon Johnson, Mike Davis. I've already forgotten the name of Washington's running back the Cardinals played in week two. I have Raheem Mostert, I guess, in week one. Gambo, it's not like the Arizona Cardinals have faced a stable of the best running backs in the National Football League in 2020. That changes a little bit on Sunday when they take on Ezekiel Elliott, or Monday, I should say, when they take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Dallas Cowboys.
You know, there's Antonio Gibson's the kid.
Thank you. Yes.
From Washington. But when you're facing Ezekiel Elliott now, you know, you're facing a team that very likely will want to run the ball more. And, you know, that with Andy Dalton at the quarterback and not having Dak Prescott, they'll probably want to run the ball more. And, yeah, now you're going to go up against one of the truly great running backs in the NFL. And stopping the run is going to be the focal point of all of their practices this week. Now, it's not just, you know, because that running game gets going, then it opens up the passing game. And as we've seen, they got some real weapons in the passing game.
Yeah, no doubt with Amari Cooper and Gallup and CeeDee Lamb, who's off to a very, very solid start so far, as a lot of people predicted that he would for the Dallas Cowboys. He's off to a good start. Devondre Campbell, Cardinals linebacker, was made available today from the team for a Zoom press conference. And said, look, by far, Zeke is the most challenging running back that we have faced so far.
He's by far the most complete back we've played. You know, with Le'Veon being out for a while, he has to get his footing back. You know, he's one of the better backs in this league, too. But Zeke's definitely a top five back in this league. He presents many challenges. He runs hard. He can catch it out the backfield. He's pretty good in protection. So, you know, when you're going against a guy like that, you just got to bring your heart at every play.
If you dig a little deeper, and yes, there are only five running backs in the league so far who have more yards rushing than Ezekiel Elliott does. Dalvin Cook, Josh Jacobs, Todd Gurley, look at that on this list, Aaron Jones for Green Bay, Joe Mixon for the Cincinnati Bengals. Those are the only five players who have more rushing yards than Ezekiel Elliott. But in a Gambo favorite, if you click on yards per carry, you have to go down there a little bit to find you some Ezekiel Elliott. There are 31 players, quarterbacks included, 31 players who are averaging more yards per carry than Ezekiel Elliott. Scoring, he's still very elite. He's only one player has more touchdowns than him so far rushing the football. That's Dalvin Cook with Minnesota. So, just that surface level examination of Ezekiel Elliott. Which do you believe, the yards per carry, the total yards? When it comes to Zeke, where do you fall on this one?
Yeah, I'm always a yards per carry guy, you know, because I think that really, you know, because listen, sometimes you got to get the ball on third and one and just get a yard. And sometimes you're going to get the ball, you know, second and goal at the two, and you just need to get 2 yards. So you're not going to run for 5 yards in those plays. But those are few and far between. But I think over the course of a game, you know, you got to break some big runs. And that's where your yards per carry comes in. That's why Kenyon Drake's yard per carry is so low, because he's not breaking any of those big runs. So I think that is, you know, that's really important. I wish I had a subscription to the Dallas Morning News. I don't, because they always tell me that I need to subscribe in order to read their stuff. But they do have a story that from 4 hours ago that it's up to Ezekiel Elliott, not Andy Dalton, to salvage the Cowboys season. It would be a great story if I could read it. It's up to Ezekiel, not Dalton, to salvage the Cowboys season after Dak's injury. Just one blank on me. There you go. Yeah. They want me to subscribe for as low as 75 cents a week, or quarterly, or annually, or a 2-year sports day. Yeah, okay. ArizonaSports.com, baby. It's free.
Free, baby.
ArizonaSports.com. You'll get all your stories there for free.
Somewhere JV just smiled when I said that. Free, baby. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's true, though, even though I can't read the story. I think that it's true that it is up to Ezekiel Elliott. He's got a, you know, him, CeeDee Lamb, they've got a lot of weapons. But Ezekiel's the guy that could really take the pressure off of Andy Dalton if he's able to have, you know, a lot of success rushing the football, which he has had his entire career.
Yeah, Patrick Peterson was on his All Things Covered podcast today and was talking about the key to stopping the Cowboys'
stop
offense.
Stop the run. We definitely got to stop the run and force, not saying that he can't do it, but, you know, we have to force Andy Dalton to beat us. Do we feel if you take the ball out of Ezekiel's Elliott's hands, you know, there's more opportunities for bad things to happen when the ball is in the air versus the ball is getting carried.
Now, okay, a subscription was not required for this ESPN story that I found today about, you know, how the Cowboys' plan is going to stay the same on offense moving forward. And there was a little nugget in there that I thought was really, really interesting. He, Ezekiel Elliott, so far, Gambo, has accounted for 22% of the Cowboys' scrimmage yards in 2020. The lowest percentage that he's ever accounted for in his Cowboys career came in 2017 when he accounted for 24% of their scrimmage yards. So he's pacing through five games to have the lowest percentage of scrimmage yards that he's ever accounted for. And I wonder if because of Dak and Amari and C.D. Lamb and Gallup, that maybe they were de-emphasizing him a little bit and will now need to re-emphasize him a little bit more, knowing they don't have Dak Prescott to throw the football anymore.
Yeah, I absolutely. And that's what the talk about was the second he went down. Yes, you have a great proven veteran, you know, a veteran quarterback in Andy Dalton who's won a number of games. And as I said, it's either him or Nick Foles. Best backup quarterbacks in the NFL. It's either him or Nick Foles, in my opinion. Dak was playing great. I don't think that Dalton can play at that level, but I don't think he has to, right? That's what we're trying to say. If Ezekiel Elliott can dominate these games, you're not going to need Andy Dalton to play at that level. Andy Dalton's very capable of taking that team up and down the field and leading them with points. And it's up to Ezekiel, I think, to really carry that load and take the pressure off of Andy Dalton.
Yeah, here's more Peterson talking about Dalton.
Andy Dalton is definitely a very, very serviceable backup, quality backup. I mean, I think I saw a crazy stat. Andy has like, 31,000 passing yards?
No question. He's been putting a lot of work.
There's not many backup that. And technically, he's not a backer. He could be a starter in this league.
Exactly.
I mean, he was a starter in this league, you know, so he got starter numbers. So to have a guy, a starter as your backup, I mean, that's huge.
So back up your point, Gambo, about Dalton and being the backup quarterback. Mike McCarthy was talking about this yesterday, and he said, look, when I was with Green Bay, we never had an Andy Dalton type to back us up when Aaron Rodgers got hurt. And somebody went and looked it up. Here were his backup quarterbacks when he didn't have Aaron Rodgers for a couple of years because of injuries.
Okay.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
Seneca Wallace.
Awful.
Matt Flynn.
Awful.
Scott Tolzien.
Awful.
And Brett Hundley in 2017. Awful. Combined. Okay, so the first three guys were in 2013. Hundley was in 2017 when he filled in for Rodgers. Those four guys combined. 5 wins, 10 losses, 1 tie when trying to fill in for Aaron Rodgers. Andy, see, and that's where you're dead on the money about Andy Dalton. He's not your garden variety backup quarterback in this league. He's not Seneca Wallace. He's not Scott Tolzien. He's a starting quarterback in this league.
Yeah. Listen, if he goes down, I was just looking this up. They got a guy named Ben DiNucci. That's their back. Dalton goes down, Ben DiNucci is the quarterback for the Dallas
He's
Cowboys.
He's Italian, not joking. So he must be awesome, right?
He's Italian, DiNucci.
Yeah, DiNucci. Yeah, DiNucci, DeLucci.
Yeah. I have no idea who this guy is. I couldn't even tell. I couldn't even tell you what college you went to. Ben DiNucci.
The University of Italy. That's what college he went
yes.
to.
Yes.
Rome University is where he went to college. He's Italian, so he must be great. They'll be screwed if Andy Dalton.
Well, I mean, the best quarterback, Joe Montana, was the best quarterback ever. He was I think Dan Pastorini is number 2 on the list.
Didn't know Dan Marino? He's not on the
Marino's third.
Marino's third. Okay.
The top 3 quarterbacks in NFL history were all Italian.
If your last name ends in a vowel, you're basically on the list for the greatest quarterbacks of all time. So that's the rule here on the Burns and Gambo show. Come back here on the Burns and Gambo show with the Italian quarterback rule certainly in play. Dak Prescott, obviously the biggest. He's not the only injury the Cowboys are dealing with. Look at the list. It's a long one. We'll talk about it coming up here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, hanging out with you on this Tuesday afternoon. We've already got baseball underway, the Braves and the Dodgers. They're in the bottom of the first right now. A busy afternoon, actually. So we got Braves Dodgers. Then an hour from now, it's Titans Bills.
Yes, and Tuesday night football.
The third time ever, according to the Elias Sports Bureau, we've got a Tuesday night NFL game. Just the third time ever.
How about that?
And then at like 5:30 or so, we'll get game three between the Rays and the Astros. So a very, very busy day of sports. Keep it right here on Arizona Sports 98.7 FM, and we will make sure we keep you updated on everything that is going on. Dak Prescott, Gambo, is not the only one who is hurt for the Dallas Cowboys. He is clearly the most noteworthy, given that he makes, you know, $33 million, given that his ankle, you know, shattered grotesquely the way it did on national TV. This was a story I got from our website, arizonasports.com. It is remarkable the number of injuries the Dallas Cowboys have had to endure so far. Dak Prescott, Tyron Smith, their left tackle, Lael Collins, their right tackle, Blake Jarwin, their tight end, Tristan Hill, a defensive tackle. They've been without Leighton Vander Esch, their middle linebacker with a broken collarbone. Defensive tackle Jared McCoy had a leg injury in camp. Cornerback Anthony Brown, they just got him back, but cornerback Awuzie's been out with a groin injury for most of the season. It goes on and on and on with the Dallas Cowboys. They have been just decimated by the injuries.
Yeah. Tristan Hill, his season is over. Now, because, you know, the Dak injury and how devastating it was overshadowed it. But before Dak, you know, left the field, Tristan Hill left on a medical cart too. He's their defensive tackle. He got rolled up while defending a pass. They had an MRI, and they confirmed yesterday that it was a torn ACL. So his season is over after five games. He's a player that they really liked. So, you know, he's done. But, you're right. I mean, they just have, you know, they got bodies at the position. But, you know, they're dealing with a lot of injury. Some of their rookies, you know, also, you know, have had some injuries. So, it's a tough year for the Cowboys. I mean, they've got a number of injuries. It's not just Dak Prescott.
No, and it does. It makes you wonder, okay, when the schedule first came out, and I think we all kind of looked at the schedule the same way. We all looked at the schedule and we went, ooh, Cowboys, week six, that's going to be a tough one. That's Dak Prescott, that's in Dallas, that's Ezekiel Elliott, that's Amari Cooper, that's CeeDee Lamb, a guy that we had 10,000 conversations about whether the Cardinals should draft CeeDee Lamb or not. And it feels like one of those games where, and we see this every year, over the course of a season, teams that looked like tough opponents become not tough opponents, and teams that didn't look like tough opponents suddenly look like they are. And this Dallas Cowboys team, this is a game where I think most Cardinal fans would have looked at it a few weeks ago and said, okay, that's the part of the schedule where things get really tough. I don't know if I feel that way about this game anymore against Dallas. They look like a shell of themselves, or at least what they were supposed to be. And I don't know if I look at this game as the tough part of the start of the Cardinal schedule or not.
Well, you question too whether they're, you know, whether they could get pressure on the quarterback, you know? I mean, six-time Pro Bowler Gerald McCoy, he got lost for the year during the first padded practice of training camp. So the defense, right from the get-go, their defense was undermanned. And now, you know, this injury, now they've got, you know, Dontari Poe and Antoine Woods, but those guys aren't, you know, they're not the big pass rush. Now, they got a kid that they drafted, Neville Gallimore.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So he's a kid that they drafted, number 82 overall. He didn't play much the first couple games of the season. He was a healthy scratch weeks 3 and 4. He got a little bit of a workload last week with 22 snaps. You know, he might be a guy that they try to rely on, right? Because it's just hard to get guys off the street that could play.
Jerry Jones was on The Fan, Dallas Sports Radio Station, today for his weekly visit. Obviously, kind of a somber conversation with the Dak Prescott injury, in which Jerry, the owner and basically general manager of the Cowboys, says that Dak's injury has to change expectations for the Cowboys.
Obviously, this does impact expectations, and it could impact the reality of how and what we do. On the other hand, this is a different year. And if you've ever had one that you could approach in an unorthodox way, this is it. And certainly in the big scheme of things, to lose a player as important in this position as Dak, then we've got to basically adjust.
Now, normally, Gambo...
Adjust to what? They weren't going anywhere this year. I mean, like that team's terrible defensively. You're in a bad division. You were 8-8 last year. I mean, there was that time under Jason Garrett, they were 8-8 every single year.
Yeah.
They haven't won a playoff game in a while, right? I mean, it's just, I don't know, the Dallas Cowboys are, expectations with Dak probably was to, you know, win that division, but they weren't. Like, think about it. You really think that that team was going to go anywhere? They're not going to beat Seattle in a playoff game or the Packers in a playoff game. I don't see that.
Before Dak or after Dak?
With Dak.
With Dak. Okay,
I know
they got
some weapons offensively, but they're terrible defensively.
I think with Dak, there were some people who thought that that was a team that maybe not a Super Bowl caliber team, but that was a team that could win a playoff game or two, given just how much talent they had on the offensive side of the football. I think with Dak, there were – I didn't pick him. I always believe the Dallas Cowboys will go 8-8 until somebody proves me wrong. That just seems like it's in their DNA. It's what they're about. That's who they are. Under Jason Garrett, it seemed like that's all they were for many and many of those years when he was there. But there were some who had expectations for him. But I'll submit this to you, and I'll take your comments about this. That division, as bad as it is, can they still win it with Andy Dalton as their quarterback?
Sure.
See, that's the thing. Is it? I don't know if Jerry's right when he says expectations have changed. Because if you can get in to the playoffs, you might be able to win a game or two once you get there. And in that division, without Dak Prescott, they still might be able to get there even without him.
So 2018, they wild card game, they beat Seattle. And then they lost to the Rams. 2016, they lost their first game to the Packers. 2014, they beat the Lions, then lost to the Packers. 2009, they beat the Eagles, then lost to the Vikings. And then from that, then it was, you know, up from 96, they won a playoff game in 96. They didn't win another one until 2009. So it was a long run for the Cowboys of not winning a playoff game. But yeah, the division's really bad, so you win a division. But so what? I mean, do you think that they would, you know, beat any of the good teams in the NFC? I mean, I didn't think that team was good enough to beat the three or four best teams in the NFC. And just because that division is so bad, I don't know that to me, that's any indicator that this team could have gotten the playoffs with Dak and did some damage.
Yeah, here's more Jerry Jones on the criticism of not giving Dak a long-term deal.
We've got to be reminded that to have a team that we've got to really manage how we dole out our resources. Dak is deserving of anything you want to put on a piece of paper, relatively speaking. He's deserving of that. And he's had, if you evaluate what he can do to help us win championships, you can see that it's there. And plus, he's a leader at the premier leader spot. We've got to make it work. So what am I saying? I'm saying exactly the same thing that I said the last time we were asked about this before the season started. It's a part of the game, is the business and the contract part.
Just not sure what he said.
I mean, I don't know. In a nutshell, I got Andy Dalton. They're going to have to see how far they can go with him. But remember, this is a team that they lost to the Rams in the opener. They beat Atlanta barely, right, on just boneheaded decisions. That probably was one of the main reasons why Mike Smith got fired. So they should have lost to Atlanta. They lost to Seattle. They gave up 49 points to the Cleveland Browns. And then they barely beat the pathetic Giants on a Greg Zuerlein field goal at the end of the game. You know, so, like, they very well could be 1-4 right now because of that Atlanta game.
Yeah.
They haven't looked good in any of these games. They haven't looked very good. So they're 2-3. Now they get a break here, right? They'll have after the Cardinals, they get Washington, they get Philly. But then you got Pittsburgh, you got Minnesota, they got to play Baltimore. So, you know, somebody's going to win this division with 7 or 8 wins. It very well could be them.
Yeah.
But they haven't shown anything in these five games outside of the fact that they can move the ball up and down the field and score points.
Through the first five games of the season, Isaiah Simmons, non-factor for the Arizona Cardinals. How has his early start to his career compared to other first-round selections? You're going to want to hear this coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, hanging out with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Gambo, what is it that we have said for years? We're going into our 10th year now doing this show together. What have we said?
What have we said for years?
About
good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Straight up 2 o'clock.
Straight up 2 o'clock.
That's how we begin and end every show. No, you didn't let me finish. What have we said for years about Pro Football Focus?
Love-hate relationship.
Love-hate relationship.
Yeah.
And it's true. We have sometimes we love them, sometimes we hate them.
I mean, mostly hate, but some
See, to me, I'm more 50-50 than you are, I think.
Nerd alert!
That's part of the reason why, right? I mean, seriously, I think Jordan had that in the queue, like, before we even started talking about this, and he was just ready to pull the trigger on it. Because it's very, look, I appreciate the work that goes into it, right? They literally watch every game, every play, every player of every game, and they give that guy a grade. And they don't just give him a grade overall. They give him a grade on, you know, like Patrick Peterson. How well does he tackle? How well does he cover? How well does he do this? How well does he do that? It's very specific. But like anything, it's very subjective. It's very much in the eyes of the beholder. And sometimes we look at what comes from Pro Football Focus and we go, yes, that makes sense. And other times we look at it and go, man, what the hell were you watching? That doesn't jive with reality. That's not what we saw. Grading all 32 first-round picks. This was a feature on Pro Football Focus today, and naturally we clicked on it because we wanted to see what they said about Isaiah Simmons.
Yeah, but it reminded me of, not you, Sarah, probably not Jordan either. You know, you take a test and you know you got a bad grade on it, and then you know you get the test and you like I don't even know if I want to look. Like you know, Isaiah Simmons,
I've done that.
Grade is going to be bad.
Yeah, you certainly can relate.
You guys are expecting a 98 and you got an 85.
Okay. I don't know what you guys are talking about. I was 100% confident on every exam.
Gambo. Don't let my brilliant vocabulary trick you. Math is by far my worst subject. So, yes, I fully expected to do C's or worse.
Yeah, see, wait, Gambo, what you don't understand is that by the time I decided to do this, that this was what I wanted to be, I basically made up my mind before every single class. What do I have to do in this class to get a C? And that's exactly how much work I'm going to put into this class. Not one ounce more. Oh, yeah. Totally.
Wow, very lazy.
Because I'm like, okay, what is it? Nothing against geography, but what is a geography class going to do in my pursuit to be a sportscaster? Nothing. So can I get by with a C in geography? Yes, I can get by with a C in geography. How much work do I have to do to get that C? That's how much I'm going to do. So it wasn't all 98%, you know, I know you like to think that, but it wasn't like that for me at all. I in college, I got very lazy when it came to some of those classes.
Even if I tried at math, I still did horribly. So it was, I guess you and I that aren't even on the same page.
You should have don't take the classes.
Well, that didn't work for some of us.
Yeah, you're paying for them. So you
graduate requirements, kind of thing.
You're required to take that geography class. As crazy as it sounds, you're required to. So,
all right.
Anyway, the point you were making about Pro Football Focus, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah. Let's break this down because they graded all 32 first round picks. And Isaiah Simmons, of course, got a really bad grade. Now, I went through every single player, right? Now, I don't have to bring up every one, but there's a couple of guys that haven't played yet, you know, like Tua and Jordan Love, that are not applicable.
There you go.
Three players were not applicable. And Isaiah Simmons' grade of 38.2 was the third worst of all the players that are playing. Now, his 38.2 was actually, and this one made no sense to me, but it was actually better than Okuda, Jeffrey Okuda from the Lions, who was a 29.3. And then one other player had a 32.6. So it was the third worst grade out of everybody that they were able to grade. And we expect that. I mean, a kid's not playing. I mean, how do you give the kid a good grade when he's not playing?
You can't, which is why I mean, It seems very unfair to grade him, right? It seems very unfair to even put a grade on him at this point, given how little he's played. What, 13 snaps this past week? 10 snaps the week before? I mean, it's if we're taking this school analogy, this school metaphor, it's like giving me a grade on the first day of class. I mean, what's the point of grading me on the first day of class? Hey, by the way, you got a C minus today on the first day. Great. I still have, you know, 100 days of class to go before I figure out how good I'm going to be at this. You don't need to grade me after the first day. So this is one of my problems with Pro Football Focus is there's just not much there to grade him on yet. I'd like to see him play more. I know you want to see him play more, but to give him the third lowest grade of the first round seems very unfair given that he just hasn't given you a lot to judge him by at this point.
No, I mean, but that's the thing. You know, like I was looking at, okay, if they didn't take Isaiah Simmons, look at some of the guys that were drafted after him.
That's funny. You and I did the same thing because I went through the list and I wrote down some of the names of the guys that we used to talk about the Cardinals drafting. It's very interesting to see which ones graded very well.
I mean, C.J. Henderson. Now, you know, we didn't want a Tommy Knight situation where you get the third best cornerback, but C.J. Henderson has a really good grade, 63.1. You know, and it says his rookie season has been largely strong so far. Jacksonville drafted him. Now you look at the offensive tackles. Jedrick Wills got a 61.8. Mekhi Becton got a 72.6. The wide receiver that Wolf was talking about, raving about, Henry Ruggs, is at a 65.4. Tristan Wirfs is at a 71. Tampa Bay. Javon Kinlaw, San Francisco, is at a 61.5. Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver, at a 68.8. C.D. Lamb's at a 73. So you just start to look at all these players that we at some point talked about, and all of these guys are having a much greater impact than Isaiah Simmons is.
Something else I looked at, too, and again, I know we're diving into a lot of grades here, but two of the linebackers from this class, we did this story a couple of days ago, or like last week at some point, where we, you know, Isaiah Simmons didn't even get like an honorable mention among linebackers drafted in this year's draft. Two guys who got the best linebacker drafted so far and the second best linebacker drafted so far, Patrick Queen and Kenneth Murray. Patrick Queen got a 39.5. Kenneth Murray got a 46.8. Not substantially better than I was shocked to see Patrick Queen's be as low as it was. There was one publication who basically decided he was the best rookie linebacker so far to come out of that draft, and he only got a 39.5. Look, the thing about it is that for all the conversations we have about how Isaiah Simmons has done so far, we just don't have enough evidence by which to judge anything by. I want more evidence to see what this kid can do, and I just wonder, A, when that day is going to come, and B, what exactly position is he going to be playing when it does come? Is it going to be inside linebacker? Is it going to be outside linebacker with the Chandler Jones injury? Is it going to be more safety? At what point is he going to latch onto a position that he can be great at in the NFL? Because we're 5 weeks in. It has not happened yet. Not even close to happen yet.
I want to bring up what you just said before because it was athletic. Best rookie at each position so far, and they had Patrick Queen as the best linebacker. First round, 28th overall by Baltimore. And it raved about him. At that point, it said he started each of Baltimore's four games, leads the Ravens in tackles. He's only missed two. He's added four tackles for loss, a sack, a forced fumble, coming off a 12-tackle game against the Redskins. So this is the love-hate relationship with Pro Football Focus. The Athletic is saying this kid's the best rookie at his position by far. Kenneth Murray is the second best, and they raved about Murray as well. But yet, Pro Football Focus, I don't know. They just don't. They might not grade linebackers very well.
When we come back, the Seattle Seahawks off to their best start in franchise history. They've been doing it with the most razor-thin margin of error. We'll explain coming up on Burns and Gambo.
I can't express to people out there what it feels like when we're going on the field. Even though it was 94 yards away in a minute 25 or whatever it was and a timeout, it didn't matter, you know. And you give Russ four downs and he's going to find a way to make a first down.
At some point you can hate him all you want. You just kind of have to tip your cap to the Seattle Seahawks. I know it hurts to do it. I don't enjoy doing it. But they're 5-0 And one of the most remarkable elements of the fact that they're 5-0 and of their 11 wins a year ago is that their last 16 wins, 14 of those wins have been decided by one score.
Yeah, what happened to the law of averages on that one?
Amen to that, brother.
No, really, the law of averages.
Seriously,
right,
exactly.
You're going to win some of those, you're going to lose some of those. They win every one. Yeah. They don't lose these games.
Can we regress to the mean, please? Just a little bit on this one? I mean, can we lose maybe a couple of those games?
They've won. Listen, they're 5-0 for the first time in franchise history after they beat the Vikings. They're one of just five undefeated teams. And they have won three games in the final minute of regulation. Final minute of regulation. They've won three of these games. And now they have a tough stretch coming up. They're going to lose one of these games. They got the Cardinals. They got the 49ers. They got the Bills. They got the Rams. They got their bye week right now. But they have been, you know, amazing. You sent me that stat on 14 out of 16, you know, one-score games, touchdown. I almost can't believe how great they are in winning close football games.
Yeah, they had 11 wins last year. 10 of the 11 were by 8 points or less. Obviously, that qualifies as a one-score game with a two-point conversion. Of their five wins this year, only the opener against the Atlanta Falcons was by more than 8 points. So 4 out of 5 this year, 10 out of 11 last year, and it's remarkable. I mean, it really is. It's 14-2.
It's not luck.
One score games. And that's, you know what?
It's not luck.
I'm glad you said that because we want to believe that a number like that is subject to luck. And I tend to believe that when numbers are skewed as badly as they're skewed like this, that you're absolutely right. It's not luck. It's a skill to be able to win games like that in those moments, and it's not just good fortune for Seattle.
Yeah, no, like you get accustomed to playing those close games. Things get tight, and people make mistakes. They don't make the mistakes; they make the plays. So that's the thing, right? I mean, when you're playing so many close games, final 5 minutes of the game, it's nothing to you. You've been in. This is what you do. That you're used to it.
You are, and
accustomed.
Something else we're used to is Russell Wilson, that 94-yard drive he had on Sunday night. That was the third longest go-ahead touchdown drive in the final 2 minutes over the last 40 seasons of NFL football. The only two quarterbacks who have put together a longer drive with fewer than 2 minutes to go in a game to win the game, Jameis Winston and Brian Griese. Boy, Brian Griese showed up on a couple of weird stats lately, hasn't he? Brian Griese, okay, so he led a 97-yard drive for a go-ahead touchdown in the final 2 minutes. It's the longest drive in the last 40 years. He also, if I remember right, one of the few quarterbacks who was 2-0 against Tom Brady, if I'm not mistaken.
Jake Plummer was 3-0, and I think Brian Griese was 2-0.
Yeah, Brian Griese was 2-0. Nick Foles was 2-0 after that win last Thursday on Thursday Night Football. So, yeah, Brian Griese popping up on the most random of sports stats and did you knows in the National Football League. Last night's game, Monday Night Football, good game, went into overtime between the Saints and the Chargers. And I'll tell you, Gambo, I might have to come correct about Justin Herbert. I didn't think much of this kid coming into the NFL. I didn't think much of this kid coming out of Oregon. He looks good so far.
Does look good. Yeah, you weren't a fan.
No, I wasn't. I just thought he was a guy. I really thought he was just a guy. I didn't think he was going to be like this soon.
Yeah, I don't think any of us did, but they've already committed to him as being the guy. They've committed, like, they're not going to give the job back to Tyrod Taylor. They're 100% committed to him. I've seen a lot of the highlights of him, and he's thrown a lot of touchdown passes, so he looks pretty good with that. Now, they're not winning any games, but all of their games are close. Like, you go look at the scores of their games, and they've been in so many close football games, they're just not pulling them out. But he is at least making them very competitive in these games.
Yeah, there's back-to-back weeks now where they've had a 17-point lead and they've blown a 17-point lead. They had it against and think about who they've had it against, too. They had a 17-point lead against Brady and the Buccaneers, blew it, lost the game. They had a 17-point lead last night against Breeze and the Saints, blew it, and lost the game. They're 1-4. The record does not grab you, but, man, the way he slings the ball down the field, showing mobility that I didn't expect him to have at this level, I've been very impressed by Justin Herbert so far.
Well, I tell you, I think it's just the polar opposite of what you were just talking about with Seattle. So you look at that. Look at the, their breaks. They lost in overtime to Kansas City by three. They lost in overtime to New Orleans by three. They lost by five to Carolina. They lost by seven to Tampa Bay. So what is that? I mean, we're just talking about how Seattle's learned how to win those games. They haven't learned how to win those games.
Yeah.
You know, they're blowing 17-point leads. You know, things get tight and they fold. Because 17-point lead in back-to-back games, they've lost. But you look at all four of the games that they've lost have been super close football games.
You lose to the Arizona Cardinals, and this is what happens. Le'Veon Bell wants out.
Kind of deteriorated the last couple of days. You know, Le'Veon was obviously unhappy the way he was used in Sunday's game against Arizona. And didn't talk to the media after the game or yesterday, which is a violation of the league media policy, but he has used Twitter, as he's done in the past, and as Jamal did, as you noted, and he clearly wants out, and I think the Jets are going to, I think they're very motivated to make that happen.
You mentioned it to me yesterday. I wasn't aware that he liked tweets about how he was used against the Cardinals. Now it has gotten to the point where the Jets are trying to trade their disgruntled running back, Le'Veon Bell, sometime before the deadline. It's October 29th, so it's 16 days away. Adam Gase complained yesterday about how he hates that a player goes to social media to complain about how he's being used, but that's a very 2020 thing. The Jets are now trying to trade Bell.
Yeah, and, you know, he was they've lost five straight games. They're not using him the right way. I mean, obviously, you know, we know what happened with the Cardinal game, but he's 28 years old. He had one reception for 7 yards, and he's been with the Jets for 2 years. He got paid, but, you know, he's not happy. And yeah, he was liking tweets that were, you know, talking about the Jets should trade Le'Veon Bell. And he liked that tweet. It was from a sports talk radio host, said the Jets should trade Le'Veon Bell. He liked the tweet.
He liked
several other tweets that were questioning why Adam Gase only targeted him once. So then he's liking tweets about, you know, why he's not getting targeted. You know, clearly he's, you know, listen, we've learned this enough here. There's ways to get yourself out of town. There's ways to get yourself out of town. That's one of the ways.
Yeah.
You know, make it very obvious that you don't want to be there. He's done that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then, of course, Tuesday night football. And only for the third time ever, we've been able to say that, according to the Elias Sports Bureau. Tuesday night football, the Tennessee Titans against the Buffalo Bills. And according to all of the tests that have come back, everybody is negative. Everybody is good to go. And for the first time since, was it the 27th of September? Yeah, the 27th of September, the Tennessee Titans are playing a football game tonight against the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, what? 17 days or something like that?
17 days since they last played.
You know, I was looking at something today about how many games had to be moved. It's shocking how many games have been moved. Without like losing a game, they've done a really good job of moving the games.
Yeah, they have. I mean, they have had to move a shocking number of games just to accommodate everything that's going on. But they continue to insist that the Week 18 option, adding an extra week at the end of the regular season, they will only go there when they absolutely have to. When we come back, the Arizona Cardinals have officially added a new veteran cornerback to their secondary. What's the plan for how they're going to use Prince Amukamara? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.